You are listening to Radio Maria Canada. We now present the Health Hub, hosted by Kathy Biasi.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Health Hub. I'm Kathy Biasi, your host, and along with our producer, Alex Diaz, and our production assistant, Daniel Tersini, we would like to welcome you to our show. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Kathy.
How is everybody?
I'm well.
Daniel's freezing.
Yeah.
Daniel's sitting across from me. Our show today is taped, so I'll give you the sort of the parameters. We're coming in here in July, which is about 30 degree. No, we're June still, about 30 degree weather, and the studio is about 18. So yeah. As mentioned, I think it's to keep us on our toes.
It's definitely
quite chilly.
Definitely helps to keep me awake.
Yeah. Yes. I guess so. It's I've got a sweater here, but it's like you ever. I don't know. When my kids were younger, when the boys were younger, yeah. They would play summer hockey. Mm-hmm. So you'd go into the arena with shorts, and you'd have to pack your track pants and your jacket to watch it, kind of like what's going on here.
Yeah, I'm speaking about that, it's just unfortunate due to the equipment. We just have to maintain our temperatures at a level that won't affect the equipment,
like meat packers.
Yeah. Pretty much.
which is fun because the actual recording room is constantly hot, so we have
so you do it for your host. Yeah. Thanks. Okay. All right, you know, it's always fun doing tape shows because we never know what's gonna. I don't know how we get through the live shows sometimes, because you know, sometimes
the energy's different though, for
it
sure.
Is yeah. Sometimes doing the tape shows it takes a little bit of time, but we did it. Three's the charm, right?
So yes. Just so a little here bit of insight. There are times of charm, listeners. So. Let's hope so.
So we are just before Canada Day, so June whatever. And this show is going, you're going to be hearing this show in September. I can't remember if we got the date settled, but when you're hearing the show, I will be traveling. But it's a fantastic show. The format is different. We have Dr. Michael Greger from nutritionfacts.org. He has written a new book called How Not to Diet. And we did a full 1.5-hour segment with him, uninterrupted. And we've already done that part of the show. It's fantastic. I think you're really going to enjoy it. He's a phenomenal guest. Very, very knowledgeable. So we will tee you up for that in a few minutes. But it was a great, great interview. So as mentioned, the show is taped. So no opportunity to call in. We are hopefully going to have, you know, maybe if we're lucky, we'll have Dr. Greger back on the show again. He is going to be doing, as you'll hear, some touring in Canada. So we'll see. We'll keep our fingers crossed. But do follow us on our social sites. We are on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We are at the Health Hub RMC on all of them. We have lots of things that pop up there on our sites. Show information, health tips, recipes, so do give us a follow. And you can email us at thh@radiomaria.ca if you have any questions that you'd like us to answer for you. Also, each and every show after it has been aired is flipped over into a podcast. We are the Health Hub. We are on iTunes, SoundCloud, all your favorite podcast platforms. And you can also find our podcasts on the Radio Maria Canada website, which is radiomaria.ca, and on my website, which is kathybiasi.com. I wanted to talk to you again, deferring back to yesterday, which is 3 months, 2 months from when you hear the show. But I had a nap. I had I'm not even sure why I didn't have a good night's sleep. I decided that it was a nice sunny day. I went outside, was going to do some work, and I thought, bag it, I'm going to have a nap. I haven't done that in a long time. I was so tired. And hence the topic that I want to talk to you about today. I have a friend who has napped for years. We make fun of him. Like from a very, you know, from a young age, he has taken a nap. He does it religiously. He's up usually around 5:30 in the morning. So he's been the brunt of a lot of teasing. But in essence, he has probably done a lot to forward his health. And we have had a guest on the show, actually, who touched on napping, Dr. Garcia Rill. He talked about sleep.
That's right.
And yeah, and this, you know, thing, talking about my nap and having talked to this friend not too long ago, I thought this would be a good subject to broach upon, because napping has been given a bad rep. If you go to Europe, you know, afternoons,
I'll
lot
be
of
there in a few weeks.
And you'll be there in a few weeks. Yeah. You'll actually be back by the time the show airs.
Yes.
But they take a siesta. They'll have a rest in the afternoon. And, you know, these days we are sleep deprived. There's no question about it. We go to bed late. A lot of people have a hard time sleeping. And this is a big subject as far as our health is concerned. We've talked about sleep and sleep habits and how important sleep is for health. So,
especially now, sorry, as we enter the fall season, yeah. During this time, it's very important to get
proper
sleep,
yeah.
Because
you're right. It's sleep. It's essential all the time. But when the seasons change, you may find that the summer months in our house in particular are very hard to get a good night's sleep in because it's so blessedly hot upstairs. So I often find that I'm waking up in the middle of the night. We do have air conditioning, but for whatever reason, it doesn't seem to reach our rooms. But yeah, it's important. And every season, the seasons change. Our biological clocks change. You know that. So it's important all the time to get a good sleep. But if you can't, what about napping? Is it good or is it bad for you? Well, studies have shown that proper napping is actually very good for your health. Apparently, a short nap between 20 to 30 minutes can improve your mood, your alertness, and your performance without leaving you feeling groggy or interfering with nighttime sleep. Doing the research for this little clip here, there seems to be different studies that come out supporting different lengths of napping, but as far as the health benefits, some studies say that anything longer than 20 to 30 minutes, you can wake up feeling groggy and you can interfere with nighttime sleeping. So we're going to hone in on this 20 to 30 minute nap because this seems to be a generally good time agreed upon by all studies. Whether or not this carries on to a 45 minute nap or an hour nap, some studies are showing yes, good health benefits. Other studies, it will interfere with your sleep. And again, there is the personal aspect of this. Everybody is different. So, you know, you have to take that into consideration. But 20 to 30 minutes, if you can have a nap, that will help you in your health. If you take a nap too late in the day, though, it can, even if it's a 20 to 30 minute nap, it can interfere with your regular bedtime sleep. So I'm going to go over at the end of this little piece some tips for napping. But a study in the journal Sleep examined the benefits of nap of varying lengths. So the results of a 10-minute nap produced the most benefit, as mentioned, of improving cognition and not interfering with nighttime sleeping. There are three basic types of naps, according to the National Sleep Foundation. The first is a planned nap, also called a preparatory nap. It's when you take a nap before you get tired. So It's, you know, like when you put your little one down for a sleep, they may not seem tired, but 1 o'clock is nap time. So that's a preparatory nap. Again, our lifestyles, we often don't unless you really are going to chisel out a time of the day to do it, which is great.
Yeah, especially if you're able to do that. Yeah.
If you are able to do that, but you know, how many times do you put your head down on the desk at 1 in the afternoon and have a 20-minute nap? It's kind of hard.
Yeah, but the thing is that Alex can testify with me is that sleep is not something that you get a lot of as a radio producer.
Well, that too. I mean, lifestyle is a big thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like most of our job, like most people think that, you know, a 9-to-5 thing, but with most radio producers, we're never actually ever off the clock. And me and Alex can both attest that we have heard stories from people in the industry who get anywhere between 4 to 3 hours of sleep. And sometimes they do it in their studios.
Yeah.
It's really like, It's a demanding job as much as people might not think so. Mm-hmm. So a little peek behind the curtain there.
Yeah, well, it's true. And other people are in the same situation.
Right.
But also going beyond career, you know, there's the aspect of staying up and watching TV and all these things can interfere with your health. So If you can take a nap, all the power to you. Nap number two is called an emergency nap. And that's maybe what you do. Emergency napping is the second type, and that's when you just drop to sleep. So, for you radio guys, you know, if you have 20 minutes between a segment, you might just put your head down. And that can be any time of day. And that's an emergency nap. One of the examples that they had in this study was pulling over while you're driving. So if, you know, you're driving and all of a sudden things become blurry,
that's
pull
most
over.
Important. Yeah, of course.
It is. It is, you know, truck drivers and so forth pulling off to the side of the road and taking a little nap because, again, 20 to 30 minutes can really improve your alertness. And then there's habitual napping, which my friend does, is taking a nap the same time a day, similar to planned napping. It doesn't have to be the exact same time. So if you put a child down for sleep at the exact same time every day versus I'm going to have a nap at some point in the afternoon. So three different types of napping. But to take a good nap, you have to, you know, if you have trouble falling asleep in general, you want to make sure that your surroundings for a nap, if you're going to start to incorporate this into your workday, you want to have a very quiet place, of course. You want to take naps earlier in the afternoon, and you want to try and do them in a dark place. So kind of a crossing over to regular sleeping habits, but again, not too late in the afternoon, but depending on your schedule. So everyone has a has their own sort of daily routine. But in general, these are the tips for napping. So that's my little tidbit for the day, unless you guys want to add anything more to it.
Actually, I have a story that might coincide with this if you...
Absolutely.
If we got the time for it. Back in my college days, which were not too long ago, I had... our radio program was very tight-knit, very small. So I knew pretty much everyone that I was going to class with on a name-by-name basis. I came in one day, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning, to get some work done. I'll go into the studios. There's only 3 booths that we have for the studios and a general outside area for them. But I go inside. All the lights are off. I turn on the light. All I hear is, what? Turn off the lights. Apparently, there had been people that had been staying overnight, and literally, like, there were 3 or 4 people, like, I think the most was, like, 3 people in one booth just, like, all out.
Out cold.
Out cold, because they wanted to call dibs on that booth, so that the moment they woke up,
right back at work.
Yeah, right back at work. Well, and it's insane.
Even going to the library. You know, there are spots, when I was in university, there were spots for sleeping. You know, so people would get there early, be able to do their work, but, you know, little cubicles, but have their designated area to just put their head down and have a nap. So that these quieter spots were beautiful. So it's if you can do it, all the power to you. It is hard to work into our lifestyle, but maybe the big takeaway from this is that napping is good for your health. Good. How about if we leave it at that?
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. On to today's show. We have with us Dr. Michael Greger. He is a founding member and fellow of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. He is a physician, a New York Times selling best author, an internationally recognized speaker on nutrition, food safety, and public health issues. He has lectured at the Conference on World Affairs, testified before Congress, and was invited as an expert witness in the defense of Oprah Winfrey in the infamous meat defamation trial. In 2017, Dr. Greger was honored with the ACLM Lifestyle Medicine Trailblazer Award. He is a graduate of Cornell University School of Agriculture and Tufts University School of Medicine. His latest book, How Not to Die, became an instant New York Times bestseller. He has videos on more than 2,000 health topics freely available at nutritionfacts.org, with new videos and articles uploaded every day. All proceeds that he receives from his books, DVDs, and speaking engagements are donated to charity. So as mentioned, we have a 1.5-hour segment with Dr. Greger. He will be talking to us about his new book, How Not to Diet. It's a wonderful, wonderful interview. We cover topics about the importance of nutrition, of course, the tenets of his new book, and how nutritionfacts.org came into being, this along with many other interesting topics. I hope you enjoy the interview, and we'll be back to you at the end of the segment.
If grace was a kingdom, I stopped at the gate, thinking I don't deserve to pass through after all the mistakes that I've made. Oh, but I heard a whisper as heaven bent down, said, child, don't you know that the first will be last and the last get a crown? It's always the ones with the scars that you use. Oh, it's the rebels and the prodigals. It's the humble and the weak. All the misfit heroes you chose. Tell me there's hope for sinners like. There's a seat at the table just waiting for you, so come on inside.
You are listening to The Health Hub here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. To contact us and be a part of the show, email thh@radiomaria.ca. We now continue with the program. Here once again is your host, Kathy Biasi.
Welcome back, everybody. As mentioned earlier, today's show is taped, so no opportunity for call-in. Please do follow us on our social sites. We are at the Health Hub RMC on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Good morning, Dr. Greger. Thank you so much for joining our show today.
I'm so happy to be here.
It's a real pleasure for me, especially I'm a huge follower of your site. As a nutrition professional, you take a lot of work out of what I have to do. So let's start there. How did NutritionFacts.org come into being?
For me, it was really inspired by my grandmother. I was just a kid when the doctor sent my grandma home in a wheelchair to die. She was diagnosed with end-stage heart disease. She had so many bypass surgeries, you basically run out of plumbing at some point, confined in a wheelchair, crushing chest pain. Her life was over at age 65. But then she heard about this guy, Nathan Pritikin, one of our early lifestyle medicine pioneers. And what happened next is actually detailed in Pritikin's biography. It talks about Frances Greger, my grandmother. They wheeled her in and she walked out. Within a few weeks, she was actually walking 10 miles a day. Thanks to a healthy diet, even though she was given her medical death sentence at age 65, she went on to live another 31 years till age 96 to continue to enjoy her 6 grandkids, including me. And so that's why I went to medicine. That's why I wrote the book, How Not to Die. And that's why I started the website, nutritionfacts.org, and why 100% of the proceeds I get from my books are all donated to charity. I just wanted to do for everyone's family what Pritikin did for my family.
That's lovely. And I'm interested to know, in your research, is your opinion of diet evolving? Has your research sort of taken you in a totally different direction than maybe what your biases were initially? How has that played out in your life?
Oh, certainly there have been changes. So even, for example, since How Not to Die came out, there's new research suggesting that, for example, roasting or toasting nuts and seeds is probably not a good idea because of the formation of what are called advanced glycation end products, these so-called glycotoxins, which are produced when high-protein, high-fat foods are exposed to high, dry cooking temperatures. And so even though, you know, it's mostly things like broiled hot dogs and chicken nuggets, things like that. If you take nuts and seeds, which are high protein and fat, expose them to the same temperatures, you can get the formation of the same kind of toxic compounds. And so in the book, I tell people how I love, you know, toasting my own walnuts and sesame seeds and realize, in retrospect now, that was a mistake. And now I encourage people to eat raw nuts and seeds, raw nut and seed butters. And so again, it's just a matter of new science comes along. And so we tweak here and there, but the basic kind of, the core tenets of healthy eating, I've really been a kind of scientific consensus going back decades now. It's just kind of, tweaking around the edges that tends to happen.
May seem like a very innocuous, silly question, but I find in my practice, I defend nutrition a lot. In your words, your own words from Dr. Greger, why is nutrition important?
Well, because the largest study of human disease risk factors in history, the Global Burden of Disease Study, funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, found that the number one cause of death in North America is the North American diet. Number one cause of disability is our diet. So the number one reason people lose healthy years of life is because of what they eat. So, for example, here in the States, tobacco only kills about 500,000 Americans every year. Our diet kills many thousands more. And so the most important thing we can do for our health and longevity is what we put in our mouths. But, I mean, that's good news because we have power, right? We have tremendous power over our health, destiny, and longevity. The vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a plant-based diet and other healthy lifestyle behaviors.
So the research has led you and led to the support of a plant-based diet. And many people would say, is that to the total elimination of meat product? Or how would you describe the ultimate diet?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter what you eat on your birthday, holiday, special occasions. It's the day-to-day stuff that really adds up. But on a day-to-day basis, we really should try to eat healthy. And the best available balance of evidence suggests that the healthiest diet is one that minimizes the intake of meat, eggs, dairy, and processed junk, and maximizes the intake of fruits, vegetables, legumes, which are beans, peas, chickpeas, and lentils, whole grains, nuts and seeds, mushrooms, herbs, and spices. Basically, real food that grows out of the ground. These are our healthiest choices.
Why do you think at this point in our history we need researchers, scientists, doctors, experts like you to write books for us to learn how to eat? I mean, this is really an unparalleled time for us in our health path. How have we got to this point?
Oh, well, it's because there's literally a $1 trillion industry. The processed food industry is a $1 trillion global industry that is trying to get people to eat what is most profitable. And unfortunately, the Venn diagram of what is most profitable and what is healthiest does not touch. So, for example, fruits and vegetables are terrible from a business standpoint. They go bad. They're perishable. And they're not even branded, right? So even a broccoli grower is not going to put an ad on TV for broccoli because you'll just buy their competitor's broccoli, right? What makes money is something like a Twinkie that can stick on the shelf for a few weeks, or even better, something like, you know, soda, where you sell brown, you know, sugar water for, you know, $2 a bottle, and it's dirt cheap ingredients, a few pennies. And in fact, here in the States, sugar industry is subsidized, so it's even cheaper. And so that's how you make money. That's how you satisfy your investors. It's not like, you know, the head of Coca-Cola is rubbing it, you know, their hands together thinking about all the children they can make obese. They're just trying to do what corporations do, and that's make money. But unfortunately, what makes money is maybe, you know, what's good for shelf life may not be good for human life, unfortunately. And so because of this corrupting power of the commercial interest, because there's so much money involved in getting people to buy things that are actually bad for them and their families, you need people with a kind of a dispassionate look. Well, let's just look at the science. Is it really good to eat these kind of products? Or should we eat healthier products, even if there isn't so much money to be made? I mean, the profiting I care about is the profiting for people's health.
So when we're talking to the everyday person, and when you're spreading the word about your website to them, do you feel that you're making inroads?
Oh, my God, absolutely. It's just night and day. I mean, it's just been a kind of a transformation. I was just, you know, I just saw a billboard for Burger King advertising a burger with 0% beef. That was a selling point. It's 100% Whopper, 0% beef. They were advertising as a pro that their new burger has no beef whatsoever. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine that happening a few years ago? Now, obviously, that's not healthy. They should be eating whole plant foods. But, I mean, but just shows the kind of sea change. I mean, you can look at the dairy case. When we were growing up, I mean, how many kinds of milk were there? There was skim, there was full. I mean, so now there's, there's a dozen different types of milks in there. There's a lot of interest in people making changes to improve the health of themselves and their families. And so this is a great time to be alive, because now there's, you know, the healthier foods are convenient. You know, you don't have to go to some dusty corner of some health food store somewhere, even just, you know, traditional kind of mainstream sellers. You know, I can walk into a gas station, like on the road. I can go into a gas station and get hummus. And that's amazing that I could do that. I mean, that's something that would not happen a few years ago.
But do you feel that now we need a whole new set of learning strategies to understand what exactly is health food, like these meatless burgers? Are they all healthy? You know, is this a whole new area that we have to try and understand? You know, we had the thing with almond milk with the carrageenan in it. People have to learn these things now. It just seems to be an ever-evolving study of what is healthy.
Oh, well, I mean, but again, the core tenets, you know, going back decades, if you look at the medical literature, there's a consensus. If I could go to the True Health Initiative, which was started by David Katz, head of the Prevention Center at Yale, where he just pulled together hundreds of the top nutrition scientists in the world to agree to a consensus statement as to what is a healthy diet. You know, just like the IPCC, the climate change, you know, get all the climate change scientists to get together. What do they think is going on? That's what we should listen to. Well, they did the same thing with nutrition and agreed on the consensus statement that we should center our diets around whole plant foods. Look, fruits and vegetables were healthy. They are healthy. They continue to be healthy. Sure, when a new food comes around, you know, we have to look into it. But all the kind of the basic tenets we've known about and don't appear to be changing anytime soon.
You've got a new book coming out. It's called How Not to Diet. Before I get into asking you about the tenets of the book, the fact that it's a weight loss book begs the question, do you feel that obesity is one of the root causes of many of the chronic diseases that we're experiencing as a world today?
It is itself a disease, and certainly increases the... in fact, I have a whole chapter on the consequences of obesity, where literally I go through the alphabet, the A through Z. There's even an X called zyphoidinia, caused by being overweight. And so, you know, that's standard, you know, osteoarthritis, type 2 diabetes, kind of on down the list. It is, not to mention shortening your lifespan. There's now been studies that involved literally millions of individuals which very clearly shows that having excess body fat is unhealthy in and of itself and increases risk of a number of our chronic diseases, making it a leading cause of death and disability. And so I wanted to take that on as a research topic. There's 500,000 papers published in the peer-reviewed English language scientific literature, with about 100 new articles every day. And so it was a monstrous undertaking, but if anyone could do it, my research team could do it. And so we sat down for a year, and it'll be out in December, and couldn't be more excited.
I want to take a step back, because this is actually a very personal question. People who are interested in nutrition, people who visit your site, you are educating them on so many different levels. Could you just take a couple of minutes, not even that, whatever you think is warranted for the question, what do you decipher as being a good study? If someone who's just delving into your site, what is a good study?
Oh, well, so I actually have a webinar coming up at the end of the year called How to Read a Research Study. And so we'll kind of spend hours going through exactly how to go through it. A good study depends on the research question. So if you want to know what, large numbers of people eat, you do a certain kind of study. If you want to know if a specific food has a specific effect, you can do a very specific type of study. It depends on the research question. But in terms of broader qualities, ideally, you'd like a study done by kind of a disinterested party. So one of the first things I do when I look at the study is I see what the funding source is. Who paid for the study? Why was this study done? And so if it's a study done on whether or not avocados are good for you, and it's paid for by the California Avocado Board, that doesn't mean it's a bad study, but it certainly means that you want to give it an extra critical eye to make sure that the study was not designed in a way to get a preferred outcome. And that's what we see, whether we're looking at big pharma, whether we're looking at the soda industry. They find that studies funded by the industry itself are significantly more likely to conclude results that are sympathetic to the funder. So it's called funding bias. And so it doesn't mean it's a bad study, but you always want to know just so you can read it kind of in that context. But my favorite kind of studies are randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trials such that you control for all factors that you possibly can. So that's how they do drug trials, for example. They give people a drug versus a sugar pill placebo that looks just like the other, the active drug that you're giving. They both swallowing capsules. There's no placebo effect difference between them. And so if there is a difference in outcome, you know the drug has something to do with it because they're both basically doing the same kind of thing. That's harder to do when you're talking about food, but there's some foods that are so potent, you can actually stuff it into a pill. You can't stuff a cabbage into a capsule, but you can certainly stuff garlic powder, for example, or ground ginger. Some of the spices are so potent that even just a quarter teaspoon a day can have a significant effect. So I talk about actually some of those in the new book for accelerating weight loss. And so we can prove that these studies have these medicinal effects, these pharmacologic effects, using these interventionist trials. But obviously there are limitations to that. All you can do is kind of short-term outcomes, as opposed to if you want to know what happens to thousands of individuals over decades, then a different kind, you have to employ different kind of study methods where you follow large populations and their diets and their disease states over time to see if certain foods are associated with any particular disease outcome.
That'll be interesting. I'm very interested to hear your webinar or your program that you're going to be doing about that, because I find, I'm not a pro at looking at studies, but I do find it can be quite confusing. Let's get on to, well, you're a pro at it, so no one better listen to than the pro on this thing, right? That's why the website is so wonderful. It takes away all that stuff.
Wonderful.
Now let's get into your book. Is this a natural extension of How Not to Die?
No. There's a whole, I have, I think, about five books in the pipeline. I'm doing a new book every 3 years. And so, I mean, they could be done really in any order, but I felt that this was probably most critical to get out, just because the obesity epidemic does not appear to be stopping anytime soon. And just kind of from an intellectual curiosity standpoint, it seemed to be kind of the most challenging to take on, just because there's just such a massive literature out there. So much of it is contradictory. And so it really, I mean, I felt that we could really kind of flex our muscle as a team to delve into a topic. I mean, you could just imagine, even people in the field can't even keep on top of the scientific literature beyond their kind of narrow domain. And, you know, so like a primary care doc, I mean, there's no way they could stay on top of the literature. And so I felt that this book would kind of be most helpful to just kind of cut through to what the best available science shows. And a lot of the stuff was really quite surprising. I mean, there's a lot of questions. I mean, even simple questions like, should you exercise before and after breakfast, or should you, you know, skip breakfast or not when it comes to weight loss? I mean, these are 1,000 article, you know, research questions. Like, there are literally 1,000 articles that address that. And it's a matter of and some say one thing, some say the other, and you have to figure out, well, what is different about these study designs that they come to different conclusions? Just absolutely fascinating. So, I mean, it was just, you know, there's so many questions that I personally have. People would ask me all the time, and I'd have to answer honestly, look, I just don't know. I've seen articles go either way, and I just haven't had a chance to go back, put it all in context, read literally every article that's ever been published on that particular, you know, research question. And so I don't want to give you an answer, because I haven't done a broad enough survey of the literature. But this book finally gave me the time, gave me the excuse to go through all that. And it was tough going. This is really, I think, the hardest research project I've ever taken on in my life. But now that it's done, whew, I'm so glad it'll be out in December, and I can't wait for people to read it. It's going to be a monster. It's looking like, well, it started out 1,200 pages, but we cut 500 pages by putting, we're going to put the citations online. So it should only be a 700-page book, but it's still twice as big as How Not to Die. But what's nice, so even though citations won't be directly in the book, all 5,000 will be online, and we're going to hyperlink them all. Oh, so there's going to be a QR code in the back. You point your phone at it, it'll pop up, and you can instantly download whatever article that you're, you know, primary source. You can read the original source yourself. So that's going to be kind of a unique feature. And we're building that as we speak.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. So I like the fact that you're tackling things that are a little bit more on the cutting edge side of weight loss, particularly chronobiology. That's a pet interest of mine. And think that, you know, it's, again, reteaching us how our body works. We've gotten away from our natural cycles. And weight loss and chronobiology and diet is an ever-evolving field. But I love the fact that you've pulled that into the book.
Oh, my God. That was one of my favorite things. In fact, you know, so the whole book is going to be, you know, made into videos that I'll put on nutritionfacts.org over the next coming couple of years. You know, because I did all this research, I want to, you know, have it out in videos for everybody. And so of course I can start it anywhere. And that's the batch of videos I started with chronobiology. I have a 15 video series coming out on chronobiology. I could have done anything in the book, but that just seems so fascinating that I just had to put that in. I mean, it's just absolutely remarkable, and something I wasn't aware of. I knew about some of the pharmacological stuff, like in oncology,
yes,
if you give chemotherapy at different times, it's
exactly
less toxic or more effective. I thought that was fascinating. But the fact that then that translates into lifestyle behaviors, that the timing of meals can have really huge effects. I mean, it just blew me away. And, you know, this whole like calories a calorie thing that the industry tries to push, you know, that a calorie of one food is just as fattening as a calorie of any other food. Even the same food at a different time has a different effect in the day. And so that was just so cool. And I just relished that literature. So you were way ahead of me. I wasn't even aware of that whole body of literature. But boy, did I have fun.
We had a guest on here, Dr. Michael Smolensky, and he was talking about hypertension and timing of medication. Translating it was a fabulous, and so enlightening. But before we have to end, I want to give you due time to tell us when your book is available, social sites that people can follow you on. And, you know, actually, quickly before we... Do you actually see patients? I can't even imagine an amount of time where you have a practice.
Yeah, not anymore. So, yeah, I had to give up my clinical practice to do this full-time. But I feel like I'm practicing medicine by the million. because, you know, how many people can you see in a day? So anyone... So the book will be out December 10th, 2019. And then I'm going to go on a year-long book tour. I have about 200 cities booked. I'm going to be all throughout Canada, not just hitting the coast with Vancouver and Toronto and Montreal, but actually some new cities in the middle that I've never visited before, which I'm excited.
Oh, do come visit us if you get the opportunity. We'd love to have you in studio.
I would love to.
In studio, it'd be great.
Oh, sign me up.
All right.
I'm looking forward to it. And anyone can find out all my information, which is all free online, nutritionfacts.org, a nonprofit science-based public service, with new videos and articles uploaded nearly every day. And the latest in evidence-based nutrition at nutritionfacts.org.
Evidence-based nutrition is where it's at. Thank you so much for joining us. I wish you all the best of luck in the new book. Can you pre-order it?
Not yet.
Not yet.
But within the next month, it should be available for pre-order. And looking forward to being up there next year in studio.
That was our interview with Dr. Michael Greger from NutritionFacts.org, and I truly hope that you enjoyed that interview. It was really fun for me to do. He's a wonderful guest to have on the show. Very knowledgeable, great speaker, as you obviously hear, and very passionate about the work he's doing. Again, his new book is called How Not to Diet. By the time you're hearing this interview, you will be able to pre-order it. It does come out on the shelves on December 10th. Thank you for listening to it. And everybody, we will talk to you next week on The Health Hub.
Have been listening to The Health Hub, hosted by Kathy Biasi, here on Radio Maria Canada.